And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green-lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, hello. We love you. Won't you tell us your name? Monday. Ooh. It's like really the middle of October, too. Can't believe tomorrow. My grandson turned 6.
Yeah, it's not my birthday.
There's a birthday party for me here. Well, actually, there will be. Thanks for tuning in. Crunch time at ya. We'll have a Richter scale. We've got it's lit at the end of 4 o'clock hour. Light 'em up. Whatever you prefer to call it. A lot to recap. You know, when you do this and you're really fully engaged, plus you're actually a sports nut and you're a big baseball fan and your baseball team played late Sunday, it's like by the time I woke up this morning, it seemed like the Oregon-Colorado game on Friday was like a week ago. Just the ability to get up on Saturday. I had some stuff to do. I've told you guys, I've learned to break it down to a science where if it's a college football game that I really want to watch, I might hunker down, watch the beginning, and maybe blow off the second quarter. You know, put it in my Xfinity DVR. If anything spectacular happens, you can go back and watch it. So you get a little yard work done, a little shopping here, spend some time walking the dogs. But, man, I watched a lot of college football on Saturday. Bits and pieces of a ton of it. Loved the Arizona State comeback to just gut Leach and the Cougs, the only winless team in conference. Nelson, what do you think about that?
Ha-ha! Wait, hold on.
Wait, is he...
You should have given me more time to tee up the drops.
I was more than willing to shoulder this incredible burden by myself. A JJ burden, if you're an old Duck fan. Then all the NFL yesterday. Seahawks are fun, man. Talk with Mr. Fentress about it later in the week. But it seems like, man... When the fourth quarter starts for a Seahawks game, you better hunker down. This is good football. What about what Frisco did to the Rams? What about the Jets beating the Cowboys? You know, my divorce from the Jets has been one of the happiest things in my sports life. But no, there will never come a day where I root for Dallas over a New York team. I was actually laughing. Not Nelson laughing, just more Steve laughing. The Seattle's, so they beat the Bengals by 1, the Steelers by 2, lost to the Saints by 3, then won easy at Arizona, then beat the Rams by 1 and the Browns by 4. For those who were around, in the late 70s, early 80s, ironically, the Cleveland Browns were known as the Cardiac Kids. You got to go back to Sam Rattigliano.
That's a fake person.
He has a great, great, great NFL films. He's on one knee with his coordinator and they need a stop. And it's something I've said a million times. One time, baby. One time. One time.
Isn't Sam the Laguiniano or what? Isn't he the guy who played the Hulk, the original Hulk on that TV show?
No.
Are you sure?
The old TV show?
The original TV version of the Hulk.
No. You're thinking of Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, it's the same guy. Isn't that the fake name that you just used?
No. But I see where you're coming from. There was a great episode of Family Ties, Michael J. Fox. And the woman he is now married to was a guest star on the show. And he ends up chasing her down, and they lived in Ohio. So he ends up chasing her down. He jumps on the track, finds her, and then realizes he has no plan. And she's like, Alex, what are you doing here? And he goes, I just wanted to let you know that I'm really sad Brian Sipe is no longer the Browns quarterback. So, you know, you're going back to like 1984 or something like that. But, you know, when you think of gut punch NFL losses, the first wild card team to win the Super Bowl was the 80 Raiders. And they were playing the Browns, and it was like over. The Sipe had driven the Browns into Raider territory. It was 14-12, and they just needed a field goal, and Sipe threw an interception. The guy's last name is Davis. I don't remember if it's Mike Davis or Mark. I think it was Mike Davis, and he intercepted the ball, and that was it. And we should have known from that point on that the Browns would be the Browns for the next 40 years, because nobody has been better at being the Browns than the Browns. And, yeah, I was kind of eating that up yesterday. And it's weird because I really do like Mayfield as a player. I think he's a gamer. I think he's gutty. He's not afraid to kind of stand in there and take it. But the level of chirping among he, some teammates and fans over the frigging Browns was like, no, you haven't, it doesn't match. Well, there's been no accomplishment. And to see them at 2-4 now is kind of fun. New England is a weirdo 6-0, aren't they? Aren't we used to this time of year them trying to figure out things defensively or with the running game? And a lot of people keep talking about how they're having trouble scoring. Yeah, that was in Buffalo. They've scored 35, 33, 30, 43, and 33. Of course, they beat the Jets, Miami, Steelers, Washington, and the Giants. I mean, is that five of the six or seven worst teams?
Yeah, I think if they had not started 6-0, there would have been more of a surprise of like, oh boy, what's wrong with the Patriots? They're playing all of these garbage teams and they're not winning. And now they've got 6-0 momentum on their side, and there's just no stopping them. Like, they've actually, I mean, they've still got one more game against Miami upcoming. They have to play the Jets and the Bills again a second time. So they're looking at, like, you know, at least 10-0 before their first loss.
As a neutral fan who's from the West Coast,
I still hate the Patriots with passion.
I understand. Okay. And there's 31 reasons. 28-3 equals 31. Your level of interest in next Monday night after what happened this weekend, New England at the Jets, all of a sudden, does that have any intrigue? Well, I'll tell you what, it has a hell of a lot more than it did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think with Sam Darnold being just, you know, having a working spleen, maybe a little less mono than before, it makes the game slightly more interesting. But, you know, it's Monday Night Football. All of the games this year have been really bad. And I don't even think that the NFL has that, have like the Chiefs-Rams carrot that they can hold out in front of us like they did last year that ended up being, you know, the best game of the year, the real Super Bowl. I don't even think like they have one of those games so they can be like, keep watching Steelers Dolphins. That's the stuff, man. Like, let's come on out.
The stuff. Hey, I know people who can get the stuff, so don't even start with me. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You hit us up via the text line 3210824. Although that works better when I open up the text line. All right, I just did that. What'd you come up with?
Well, I'm looking at the Patriots schedule. At the Jets Monday night, the Browns, then at Baltimore, a bye, at Philly, home against Dallas, at Houston, then the next week at home against Kansas City. Those are two really tough games that are going to go back to back that are probably going to get at least flexed into the afternoon portion of the day on a Sunday, maybe even primetime. So they could go maybe until week 13 without losing. And that's kind of a toss-up with how Philly's going to play, but that game's on the road in Philadelphia. You know, some Super Bowl hangover magic and just kind of weird stuff might happen in that one. Who really knows there? There's a whole lot of W's left on this schedule. And then they end the year Cincinnati, Buffalo, Miami, as if you couldn't ask for an easier way to get the Patriots rolling into the playoffs by going 3-0 and clinching a bye.
They're already two games up on everybody.
Yes.
And they are in the East. There's like no chance they're not going to be a one seed.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Again. All right. 284-8571. Call us. Text us. Again, 3210824. Try us on Twitter at 953 the score for the station, at Sports Talk 953 for the show, at Rick Nodgers for Nick. So I've got an article coming out in Ducks Illustrated this week. And it's like, We really, and I saw Rob Mosley tweeted about it. I started over the weekend, and it was at the behest of a listener. Does the defense need a nickname? And not just one for the sake of having one. They're doing things that you rarely see. And we know what gangrene was here. 94 Rose Bowl team, 95 Cotton Bowl team. Then the rug got pulled out, and the defense actually stunk in 96 for multiple reasons. The sport of football is littered with legendary nicknames for defenses. Not really college, though. I know that here, when John Neal was the secondary coach, you had the D-Boys, Jairus Byrd, T.J. Ward, Chung, Troy Hill, Cliff Harris. Hell, I remember when Tyree Robinson was a redshirt freshman talking about it. And that was probably, 2015? But clamping down like this, first, how do you go about picking a nickname? Color coordinated? Is it a unique trait? Is it a distinctive or effective characteristic? It is about how they defend the red zone, keeping teams out of the end zone. I like the fact that, they've got one stud that leads each unit, Jordan Scott up front, Troy Dye in the middle, linebackers and Javon Holland on the back end. Could we tie it into the name of the new coordinator, Andy Avalos? When you think about it's the defense has been doomsday. That was the Dallas Cowboys, D.D. Lewis and those guys during the 70s. Had the Steel Curtain, which primarily focused on the front four of, Mean Joe Green, L.C. Greenwood, Dwight White. You have the Orange Crush, Tom Jackson, Rulon Jones, and, Reuben Carter of the 77. Can't think of the name of the team. Broncos. Hello. The no-name defense of the championship Dolphins in the early 70s. Purple People Eaters of the Minnesota Twins with the triumvirate of Hall of Famers. Alan Page, Carl Eller, Jim Marshall. The Fearsome Foursome of the L.A. Rams. Merlin Olsen, Rosie Greer. That defense. So, I'll take suggestions, and if we could get it down to a good four, we could throw it out there. I'll tell you what, I haven't heard a good one yet. A couple of you have been kicking around. Somebody said Gangrene 19. I'm not going to be totally dismissive of that because I see where you're going, and it does pay homage to the first group, but kind of curious. The Cristo Wall. I just got this on Twitter.
Although that could probably be the name of the offensive line group as opposed to the defense, just because I think it should be, if you're going to go with a coach's name, have it be Avalos' name on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I liked tying it into the coordinator, and not to be dismissive of what Jim Leavitt did here, but this has been turned up to 11. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Randy. Randy, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. How are you?
All right. What's up?
Well, it's funny you brought up the defensive nicknames, because I was thinking about that before you even brought it up, and there was a story in the paper today about someone saying, calling them Gangrene 2, and I don't think you want to give Gangrene their credit, and you want to give this defense their credit, too.
Yeah,
so
I'm not,
have to keep them separate.
Yeah, I'm not on board with a variation of Gangrene,
no.
Because they're a standalone moment in history of this
exactly.
program. Yeah.
So here's my two. And you brought up similarities to both these, but as far as our defensive coordinator, how about Andy's Avalanche?
Oh, that's not bad at all. All
and
right.
here's my other one that brings in our star middle linebacker, the Dynasties.
Oh, I see what you did there.
See?
Dynasties. All right, believe me.
We're Dynasty.
I got it. I'm with you. And
just,
go ahead.
I have to add one more thing. Being a sports fan and being a Warrior, I'm worrying if you start talking about defensive nicknames that the Huskies are going to put up a double nickel on us.
Nice, Randy. The superstition element always comes in. And, of course, as a Knicks fan, I can't even hear the words double nickel without thinking of the old Nike commercial with Mars Blackman and Spike Lee saying, and then money came in and put a double nickel on my beloved Knicks. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Tony. Tony, good afternoon. How's it going?
Stevie T, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
You know, man, just once again, congrats to the Ducks on a good win. I actually thought Colorado might get double digits, but not much more than that. So kudos once again to a defense that, of course, I knew in the beginning of the year was going to be top-notch. With that being said, let's just hold off on the nicknames. And listen, people, the 94 Rose Bowl, 38-20 to Penn State does not mean Gangrene. It was good enough to get us there. 96 Cotton Bowl, 38-6 to Colorado, good enough to get us there. Could we get somewhere before we start looking at nicknames, please? This team is excellent, but we got a ways to go, people.
I know,
BBC,
but
love the show, man.
Have good one, Tony. Well, I'll grant the Cotton Bowl defense didn't really live up against a limited Buff offense, but that was an historic Penn State offense with Kerry Collins and K.J. Carter. Bobby Engram played a lot of years in the NFL. Kyle Brady at tight end. I think they had a couple of high picks that were on the offensive line. And it got Oregon a Pac-10 championship, which at the time was an unfathomable, illogical concept. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, 45-3. I guess it would have been nice if I mentioned that they crushed Colorado. I'll tell you what, when we got to the 12-minute mark, and I'm talking pre-kickoff, there were a lot of people kind of looking around and like, are there going to be like 11,000 people here? Then it was Ann Peterson, who covers a lot of Oregon athletics and Oregon State. She's based in Portland, I believe, and works for the Associated Press. And I put something out on Twitter, and she hit me back with, from what I understand, the traffic coming down from Portland is a bear. And then you get to the point where all of a sudden, you know, you're into the first quarter and like, oh, okay, now there's 50,000 people here. And that in between quarters where they played Matt Carney's coming home with the yellow and green lights or whatever they were, that's really cool. I know it happens in a lot of stadiums, but when you're kind of got your laptop and you're taking notes and you're actually watching the game, and first of all, I just love that song. I love that video. Get to get my man who scores the happiest touchdown in the history of Oregon tight ends. And the first of all, the videos are spectacular, that he incorporates the Jerry call on the pick and the Mike Tirico call, I think, of Joey Harrington in the Holiday Bowl against Texas, getting the pass back from Keenan Howery. But beyond that, we went on, and the sports idol was down for the game, and he comes over to me, and he asks, because I had put out on Twitter, whatever the last home game was, I'm sitting there with Nick, and I was like, I gotta find out who the guy who's celebrating. He catches a touchdown pass, and he kind of does the double fist pump, and you knew it was a tight end, and he wore like number 90. And one of you, finally, I went looking through like every touchdown from that era, and it turned out to be the guy's only touchdown as a Duck, Vince Ferry, in the UCLA homecoming game of 1990. So to get to see that every week now and realize, oh, Vince Ferry, genius. I was actually at the game, but don't have a lot of recollection. By the way, couple of you have made inquiry. Javon Holland and Troy Dye getting injured on the same play. I said that was like the nightmare dream, or it was a combination of you're falling off a cliff, you're drowning in water, your car's going backwards at a high speed with no brakes, and you showed up late for your SATs where it's almost over in your underwear. Turns out they're fine. Jacob Breeland is done for the year. And it sucks. We'll elaborate on that for sure. Conversation that I was having with Joey Mack, which I was kind of piggybacking. I think it's every Wednesday. Rob Mosley of GoDucks.com joins him on Duck Insider about the Cumberlander injury and why this is so frustrating and so painful. And the reasoning that they gave was just so spot on and could mostly come from the beat writers, from folks who work with the University of Oregon, those who work with the athletic department and get to know these young guys and realize that fans get excited about the new flavor, the new recruiting class, the new faces. And the tendency is for the guys who redshirted, then started coming on and maybe saw the field on special teams as a redshirt, then maybe got snaps at their position as a sophomore, then started to emerge as a junior and were presented with an opportunity to have a breakout senior year. And lo and behold, they get injured and the plug is pulled on their Oregon career. And it just sucks. And there's no other way around it. So we'll elaborate on that. For sure. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Before we take a break on this magnificent Monday, Andy's Dandies for the defense. That's not awful. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I already got 7 suggestions. So before we take a break, shout out to our friends at Josh Cooley, the official real estate team of the Oregon Ducks. And they want to offer you a human approach to a situation called selling your home. First, you need them to help you get a proper home value. And what the deal is, there are certain websites where if you offer up a zip code or something like that and you get an estimation on what the value of your home is, well, what if it's 20-25% off? Yeah, that's not good. So they want to provide you with the ace client service that gets you what you want. And right now, the process of selling a home, if you've gone through it recently, it's, you put a for sale sign up. Yeah, that's not really that difficult. And first, you got to get an offer to accept an offer, and then the whole moving thing. But whether it's appraisal or home inspection, it's tough to find the finish line to get that home sale completed. You don't want to gamble here. Deal with the best in the business. Call Josh and his team, 359-1999. Again, that phone number, call or text, 359-1999. Visit their website, EugeneRE.com. And we really appreciate the support of the Josh Cooley team, the official real estate team of the Oregon Ducks. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do that. Come back. Yeah, I've got some more Ducks and Pac-12, you know, college football. You know, you notice I haven't really mentioned much about how the weekend ended last night at Minute Maid Park. So I'm trying to ease into it without an FCC violation. That just seemed unnecessary. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Two receivers to the right. Back to throw. Herbert on third and goal from the 7. Steps up into the pocket. Oh, got him wide open. Breland, touchdown. I mean, there's nobody near him.
But they lost him.
Biggest question was Herbert going to run out of time as the pocket was starting to close in?
Great vision by Justin Herbert.
Yeah, you know, you look at that TD that got the ball rolling and it was like stealing. That was Jacob Breland's 6th. Touchdown catch of the year. The record for an Oregon tight end is 9. Justin Peel, 2001. And dude's season is over, and it's just awful as we welcome you back. Sports Talk 95.3, The Score. It might seem short and curt, and as we do host a call-in show, we do encourage, but I'm not engaging in the where they should be ranked thing. It's dumb. It has no point. There is no value. It has zero meaning. Literally, nothing. It means nothing right now. Once upon a time, in the land before the BCS, that wild and crazy time known as the mid-90s, the national rankings mattered. Both coaches and writers. And for Oregon fans, remember like 2001, 2007, a couple other seasons, if they got a big win, you waited for the announcement. You know, you hit refresh and the new rankings came out. If you think about 2001, where after the Holiday Bowl win, they were, I think, was that top 10 for the first time ever to start the season? Might have been. There's a way to find that out. I actually have a site. But, you know, they had the tight win over Wisconsin. They beat Utah State and got to 6. Then they had the loss to Stanford, which in essence would end up costing them their shot at Miami and the Natty. And then the thing people forget about is, you know, they beat UCLA by a point. They beat the Beavs in the Civil War, the Howry punt return when they were number 4. And then both the coaches and writers had them 2nd. It was the idiot BCS computers, which they would change because of that. Okay, so here's the, in 2001, they were at the time 7th in the AP preseason poll. They would go in that run where 2011, they were 3, 12, 5, 13, 3, 14, 3, and then 15, 7. But no, the only time they were even in the Associated Poll preseason poll prior to 2001 was 1954. So, yeah, that was a rarity. And, you know, Nebraska ended up playing Miami, and it was a joke. But in 2007, they were unranked until the Michigan game at the Big House. Then they made the top 15. They waxed Fresno State, knocked off USC. It's amazing, that game. You look back in 2007, John David Booty was injured, and Mark Sanchez filled in. And then Matt Harper had those two big interceptions. So they beat Arizona State. And if you remember, teams like Rutgers, Boston College, West Virginia, all kind of took places at number two. Then, of course, Dennis Dixon got injured. The wheels fell off the regular season cart. And that year, 2007, was the only time a two-loss team won the Natty, Les Miles and LSU. Then, you know, in 2010, they opened at 11, 1-1-1-1-1. You know, then Ohio State got beat in the middle of October, and all of a sudden, whoa, Oregon's number one. You know, by the way, in 2010, when they played Newton and Auburn for the Natty, at this point even, the Tigers were 5, but by week 11, they were 1-2, and there were only two. The way that season played out, there were only two teams in what we now consider the Power 5, Auburn and Oregon, who were unbeaten. There were two other teams unbeaten, but one was in the Mountain West, TCU, and one was Boise State, who was still in the Western Athletic Conference, were still in the WAC. But then, that weekend, Thanksgiving, they got beat by Colin Kaepernick and Nevada. So, you know, nobody was putting TCU over a Pac-12 or an SEC team. And, of course, you know, the rest, they squared off in Glendale. So, it all played out. There's a filter-down process when you only have 5 major conferences. That works. And like I said a million times, unless you're Auburn in 2004 and playing a power league, if since the invention of the BCS, if you won all your games, you're in. And now that's 100% of the time. And now the current rankings, which have absolutely no value, and there are only 8 unbeatens as we speak already. You know, you got Bama and LSU in the SEC, plus they play November 9th. Clemson is the lone unblemished team in the ACC. I can't imagine they're not going to roll and win that Atlantic Coast Conference championship game and be back in.
Aren't Clemson the only ACC team in the top 25 anyways?
Oh, I don't know. I was just looking for zeros.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they're also the only ACC team in the top 25.
That's because it's terrible.
Yeah, they're very bad at football.
They're not even top-heavy. They're one-heavy.
Yes. Which is as top-heavy as you can get.
Possibly,
but
yes.
It's also as not top-heavy as you can get.
Well, if now, of course, people are like, oh, Mac, you should have kicked the field goal and kicked the extra point and hope for the best in OT. You got Oklahoma and Baylor. By the way, Baylor unbeaten playing that conference, and they're only ranked 18th. But, you know, they played such a candy-ass non-conference schedule. Rice, Stephen Austin, and Texas San Antonio, and nobody they've played in league is even ranked. So you got 3 now in the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State. Buckeyes play Wisconsin a week from Saturday, then the Nittany Lions the Saturday before Thanksgiving. So Wisconsin and Penn State do not play, but obviously if they went unbeaten, they would meet in the Big Ten title game, and that's assuming one of them could beat Ohio State, which, Ohio State looks really good. So in a perfect world right now, if you are the powers that be, there is a path to no debate, no issues, no criticisms, because the Pac-12 has no unbeatens. So you could technically have Oklahoma, Clemson, unbeaten, whoever wins Bama, LSU, or whoever wins out in the Big Ten, you'd have 4 Power 5 unbeatens, there's your playoff.
The problem with whoever wins Bama, LSU is that whoever loses is also going to get a boost because, wow, their only loss is to the best team in the country, and it was 6-3 again, and it was some of the best SEC football we've ever seen, and then we're just going to get stuck into, we'll let them play again 1-4. Let's have that matchup one more time.
Not over an unbeaten. Never. Not even a chance.
You're not. I know, but the thing is everybody else is going to be arguing.
Everybody's a crybaby.
Well, yes,
and we ignore crybabies.
Well, we don't though, because we end up yelling at them on Tuesdays and then again on Fridays for the most part.
By the way, the days of Bama LSU 6-3, not so much. This year it might be 66-63 with those offenses. So there could be controversy this year, but as always, it might be over a fifth team. Maybe. Now, in a perfect world, which I think we all root for, there's complete mayhem, and everybody ends up getting beaten. Although, I could see Alabama, I could see LSU, I could see Ohio State. Blah, 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 blah. I can't see Clemson losing a game in that league. I just can't imagine it happening unless, you know, could be in the first quarter or something. Lawrence tweaks his knee. It's not permanent. It's just to keep him out of game. And with what they lost on defense, could they hunker down and win 117-114?
There's still the strong possibility that Clemsoning happens and they just kind of Clemson
the game. That's
still
a thing with two national titles?
I don't think shaking something as turning your team's the school name into a verb, that generally doesn't go away. I think there's still Clemsoning. You can still Coug it. What else do we got?
Well, the Cougs didn't help it with that loss to UCLA.
Right.
That cemented it.
I mean,
more
they challenged Clemson
it.
Really almost Clemsoned against North Carolina. I would think if they didn't have the national titles and they were constantly, say, Georgia bulldogging
Georgia-ing?
It. Georgia-ing or bulldogging it, where they're, hey, we're just going to play in a bunch of big games and then always lose. If they had been that version of Clemson without the national titles, they do probably lose that game to North Carolina, and they would have Clemsoned, but they didn't Clemson because previously they stopped Clemsoning, but it doesn't go away. Their team name is a verb. That doesn't just go away.
By the way, I didn't even realize Minnesota's unbeaten. Good yeah. Text. See who they've beaten, though? South Dakota State, Fresno State, Georgia Southern, Purdue, Illinois, and Nebraska.
So, if you surround yourself with turds, you're headed towards Turdville.
They still have to visit Iowa and host Penn State and Wisconsin. At Northwestern won't be a day at the beach, though they've got to feel pretty good about going into New Brunswick this week or Piscataway and taking on Rutgers. All right, 284-8571. So, wait a minute. Are they unbeaten and not even ranked? That's what...
No, they're 20.
Oh, okay, all right.
Also, Appalachian State is 5-0 and they're 24th. Keep an eye out.
Well, I'm only talking P5 schools.
Keep an eye out, Steve.
For App State? Do I have to?
Boise City as well.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to jump on in. By the way, quick reminder, man, what a fun show we had down at the IHOP for a Duck Talk Live, brought to you by Bi-Mart. Terrence Scott, the top receiver on the 2008 team, joined us, and dude is pretty inspirational. I know he's working now. Got a shout out from Bev Smith of Kid Sports, working with fifth and sixth graders. Came from a really rough upbringing. Had four older sisters, absentee dad, mom with a drug problem. The percentages says he don't even make it through high school. He did. Then he and a best buddy bolted after high school for the West Coast just to get away from it. Ended up going to junior college, came here, ended up being a pretty young dad. He had his beautiful daughter down there. He now also has a son. And mom now has cleaned herself up, been clean and sober for more than two decades. She's back in Tennessee where he's from and, helping out people who suffered a similar problem she did. It was just really uplifting, really enlightening. We posted it on our Facebook, but we'll be back with more Duck Talk Live this Friday from 8 to 9 at the IHOP at Gateway. Free pancakes! And Brent Haberle, who from Cottage Grove played linebacker for the Ducks. He'll be our guest this week. So look forward to that. And if you can't make it down, we'll have the call. We'll have the program for you on our brother station, 96.1 Kazell. All right, that brings us to break time. Let's do just that when we come back. Since it's a Monday, since it's the final segment of Crunch Time, we will Richter scale you next. 95.3, The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Late clock down to two. Russell Wilson hit as he throws for the end zone. Catch made! Jerron Brown, a Seahawks touchdown. On third down, Russell Wilson throws. Touchdown, Seahawks! Delivered to Jerron Brown, his second touchdown of the game.
Two TD throws to the vet Jerron Brown out of Clemson, originally an undrafted free agent with the Cardinals. Spent his first 5 years there, and this season two with the Seahawks. Last year, he had five touchdowns on 14 catches. This year, he has two on 11 catches. So he's got 25 catches over 2 years, seven touchdowns. Dude is Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker. Unbelievable. Welcome back, Sports Talk. Also Crunch Time on occasion. 95.3 The Score. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So real quick, we're trying to come up with a nickname for this Oregon defense. No A's yet, maybe a couple of B's. We'll run through the list in a little bit, but hit us up, 3210824.
Duck fence. Duck defense. Duck fence.
No, terrible.
Catch on.
No, it won't. It's a Monday. It's crunch time. Let's wrap with the Richter scale.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad. How bad?
Oh, my God. That's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Doc Nick.
Time for the Richter scale. Wrapping up the weekend that was on a Monday during crunch time. Speaking of the Duck defense, they held serve against a true freshman in his first ever game in college football week one and came up 9 seconds short of a win. They blew up Nevada. They shut down an FCS team. They beat a broken and battered Stanford team on the road. Went the entire month of September with giving up just one touchdown. And then Friday, they faced a serious passing attack with a veteran quarterback, NFL caliber wide receivers, and held the Buffs to a field goal. There are plenty of qualifiers and pretty of the first impressive showings by this Duck defense, and that was the Ducks once again showing that the defensive side of the ball was the side to pay attention to, despite Justin Herbert throwing for 261 yards and CJ Verdell rushing for 170. There were sacks, QB hurries, some incredible interceptions, and another great half of football with a shutout that basically came down to an upright. How sure are you that this is the best Duck defense we've ever seen?
Ever. Considering they really haven't faced a big-time offense, I know Colorado's got an arsenal. I won't jump to too many conclusions, but I'll give it a 50-50 right now.
OMG, the state of Georgia could not have had a worse week. The Barves lost game five before it started. The Falcons made the Cardinals look competent without their top two wide receiving options, and they lost because Money Matt Bryant missed an extra point after literally making his last 1 million field goals inside of 35 yards. And Georgia, the Bulldogs, a chance to run away with the SEC East, could not shake South Carolina at home. Rodrigo Blankenship, who is the least college kicker of all college kickers, had a kick blocked to end the first half. Will Muschamp attempted an almost too long field goal for NFL kickers. Both teams went scoreless in a college overtime period, and then Blankenship missed a field goal that would have sent them to a third overtime. Both Smart and Muschamp looked like they were trying to lose that game, and Smart got the upper hand, really. So how bad of a week did Georgia sports fans have?
That was painful. That's an F. The season ends. Their championship run ends. They're the Falcons again. It's brutal. It's an F.
In baseball, I literally don't know what to make of the Washington Nationals. They went from being a cursed franchise to finally winning a playoff series to a 35-year-old Anibal Sanchez nearly threw a no-hitter, and Max Scherzer matched him in Game 2. The Cardinals have one run and four hits in two games. I don't know how. And then in the ALCS, the Yankees bashed in Game 1. They nearly had baseball karma on their side after Elgary, Gary, the baby Kraken Sanchez swung at a pitch that was so bad it fooled the umpire and the catcher into thinking he foul tipped it, and then he struck out on what was a makeup call, 110% sure of that, on a pitch that was 3 feet outside. And then in the most ball don't lie finish ever, Carlos Correa walked it off on the first pitch of the bottom half of the inning. How big of an impact will these results have on the rest of these series?
My answer is I hate J.A. Happ. Is that a legitimate answer?
No.
They had a chance to put him away. Up 2-0 heading home, even though they have to face Cole. What was the...
How big of an impact will these results have on the rest of the series?
Well, there is a rest of the series. The bottom line is now it's dead even, and even though they're going back to the South Bronx where the Yankees were as good as anybody, they got to face Gerrit Cole. So that's a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10 impact.
I also like how somebody brought up that Happ was a former Mariner and that's why they were rooting for him. And you go, don't bring the Mariners into this. And like a half an inning later, a Mariner.
And by the way, he pitched for the Mariners a year.
Right.
Freaking Mariner fans could ruin everything.
Mariner Hall of Famer, J-Hap. After 3 to 4 weeks of some not great football, the football was great this weekend. The Chiefs-Texans had a great game, but Kansas City lost for the second week in a row, despite the return of Tyreek Hill to an offense that was already on fire. And the 49ers had such a strong defensive performance at home, on the road, at the Coliseum against the Rams, who have now lost 3 in a row and managed only 157 yards of total offense. Yuck. But also give some praise to the 49ers. After drafting defensive linemen in the top 5 for 5 straight years, it finally paid off. How worried should the Rams and Chiefs be about their bad showings in the last couple of weeks?
Well, what was the staple and a constant in a sea of variables are now in there with the variables. Who the hell expected the Rams and Chiefs to struggle to score points, especially L.A.? I mean, they were the number 2 scoring offense last year. They scored a touchdown in the first quarter, and that was it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried should they be? It's still October. It's not panic time, but it's a 7. I'll give you a 7 for that, for sure.
Give them 7s.
I know you're 7. You'd be a 7-year-old, no house, walking the street. So looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour, we'll take some more of your nickname for the Oregon defense suggestions. Birds of Prey, Thumptown, Andy's Avalanche might be the one up there among the leaders. Crystal Wall, I don't know about. Green Reaper.
Green Reaper, I like that.
Yeah, that's not terrible. Avalos's Avengers, okay. Playing into the whole Marvel theme. You're getting better. You're improving. Your odds are getting a little bit better. But
more puns!
We do have some... lighting them up to do. That'll be the end of the 4 o'clock hour. So hang tight. Coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
What did we just see? Holy smokes!